Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 219.
This week on the podcast, Anthony Weiner is now dreaming bigger than only screwing up his own election bids.
And self-proclaimed brilliant negotiator Donald Trump got easily tricked into picking Mike Pence by a fellow idiot.
Insurance companies are continuing their long march to screw all of us over, even under Obamacare.
And thousands of wild buffalo literally appear at the Standing Rock protest as if we're in a fucking movie. Turns out they want clean water too.
Plus, the election is rigged by Trump voters committing voter fraud to fight the, quote, rigged election.
And, arrgh, the pirates are coming!
We'll have all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the web at www.braintrustlive.com.
That's right.
Welcome to another October surprise edition of Brain Trust Live.
Yes! Oh, God.
What is hopefully our final October surprise. This has been the most October surprises.
Well,
there's only
next
supposed
week
to
be
one
November.
Of them. Thank
so
God. I'm sick of this
November
bullshit.
Would be a November surprise at that point.
We've had more October surprises than I can ever recall happening
gosh,
in an election. There's been so many bombshells.
I know.
And this one was the least bombshelly of them, but the timing of it was just so horrible.
Right. And the reporting of it was more
Real
horrible.
Horrible.
Like,
everyone made the wrong decisions.
Was also excited about having something exciting to report
well, they,
on.
I mean, you
I
saw
can,
how short
I,
our podcast
I can
was last
that.
Week.
Right, exactly.
They had nothing to
they
fucking talk
they
about.
They needed it, right?
Yeah.
So
this is what happened.
But do better.
Do better.
Guys.
On Friday, James Comey, the FBI director, sent a letter to Congress announcing that his agents had discovered new emails related to the Clinton investigation.
Yeah, which they sort of didn't really, actually.
They didn't really. And also, this case, they... So he implies in this vague letter that like he knows something about it, but
and
he
also,
doesn't.
And also, like,
all he knows is there might be emails.
And the immediate like breaking news story was that the investigation has been reopened, which also isn't exactly true.
No,
I mean,
it's not
sort
even,
of is, but it's also not.
Well, no, it's not
it's
even
not.
Possible because the investigation can't be reopened.
Right.
What they can start a new investigation if they feel like the
and
other
can,
one was handled
and
poorly.
And they can look at these emails if they want to, but it's not.
It's not some sort of FBI investigation that's going on now. Also, so here's what happened. It, of course, goes back to my beloved Anthony Weiner.
How is this possible?
Come on. I feel like he has a combination of, like, terrible ideas and then just, like, terrible luck on top of it.
I know.
Like, he's been caught with this bullshit more times than any one person should have been.
I know.
We know that he's texting and sexting with random women.
Right.
It's, like, not a surprise anymore.
Yeah.
Apparently now it's with teenagers.
Right.
But he's...
And that's where we got into trouble.
That's where we
because
got into trouble here.
Because what happened was the FBI got a hold of his phone and his iPad.
Well, because they're doing an investigation.
Because they're doing an investigation of him.
Allegedly been sexting with a teenager.
And also a laptop. And as we know, his... Now,
separated wife. Well, no, they're still together.
Right. Huma Abedin was apparently also using this laptop, and they found some emails related
to
her
sending emails to Clinton.
Right, exactly, that she had used this laptop.
That's because she's Clinton's top aide. So, of course,
so
they don't currently have information about what these emails are. They only know that there are emails. There was a cache of emails on this computer. This is Anthony Weiner's computer.
Most thinking people are imagining that these are duplicates of emails that they have already gone through because they've already gone through all of her emails.
Exactly.
So
it
seems like a
big... You don't send different emails from different devices anymore.
No.
That's not how technology works. But so in any case, they can't actually reopen an investigation, but they are, you know, charged with investigating the mishandling of classified information.
Right.
So, and they knew that there were devices related to Clinton that they had not found or, you know, had not anticipated.
Right. Well, they
is one of them.
They destroyed a few of them with hammers.
Right. Exactly.
Lest we forget.
Right. There were some Clinton technology items that were destroyed by her own camp with more barbaric means. But the FBI, in closing the investigation, knew that there were devices that were going to possibly come out, but that these devices likely wouldn't change the sort of course of their ruling. And if something major came out, they would have to launch a new investigation.
Right. Well, and also, like, it's like you said, I mean, assuming that this is a new device, if this was an email that was sent from Huma Abedin to Hillary Clinton, which also they aren't, because supposedly haven't they decided that none of these were actually to or from her or something?
I don't think they were.
Anyway, That could be wrong, but I'm pretty sure, or it could be something that Hillary's saying that she's lying about, because like she also said that Comey only sent his letter to the GOP, which is PolitiFact said was wrong. Anyway, but you would have looked, you would have seen this email
come up within, on the other end.
Within Hillary's emails that they already looked through, and they've looked through all of them.
They've so it doesn't
matter.
All of her
it doesn't matter
staff.
Whether it came through Anthony Weiner's laptop or not. It's still right. the same email.
It's not like physical letters, where if you send a physical letter from one address and yeah. you send a different physical letter yeah. from a different address, those can't be the same letter.
Now, it wouldn't surprise me that it would be the federal government of all places that would not know how that technology works.
So true.
yeah.
Very true. A lot of historic trouble with fax machines. Other items of technology
yes.
happening at Clinton State Department.
Right.
But so, in any case, agents found this stuff. They brought it to Comey. He decided they should investigate.
Right.
That requires a court order. So they, as when he announced on Friday that they were going to investigate, they had not actually read
they
any of these emails. So he sends this vaguely worded letter to Congress
yeah.
that makes it sound like there's a bombshell waiting.
Yes.
Because it doesn't say
right.
anything.
We've got more emails.
But it just says we have more emails. It's yeah. like all of their worst fears are confirmed in this
yeah.
letter that has no purpose for being sent.
Yeah.
He apparently, the Justice Department encouraged him not to send it. They
yeah.
thought that this would be an example of meddling in a presidential
yes.
race, which it is.
Well, and there are also people who are saying that he may have violated federal law here,
right.
too, by doing this.
Because this happened 11 days before the election, and this the reason he claims he sent this letter was because in closing the investigation on Clinton, he promised Congress that he would have full transparency with them if
yeah.
new information came to light.
Yeah.
That's because there are a bunch of paranoid crazies who were looking for anything
yeah.
to be excited about. So he claims that he was doing this because he had promised to be transparent
yeah,
about this kind of information.
But interestingly, he's known about it for a long time.
But he's known about it for a
since
while.
Since like the beginning
and,
of the month.
Exactly. And somehow chose 11 days before the election to make his...
Curious.
Announcement.
Yes.
So it does feel like he's maybe meddling
yeah.
a little.
Important to remember that, you know, Republicans were mad at him, obviously, for not indicting her. But, you know, this could be, you know, a lot of Democrats are sort of like thinking that maybe this is how he is getting back at her. He's a Republican.
He's a Republican.
He's obviously supposed to be nonpartisan. But
right.
I mean, the timing of this is questionable
it's,
at best.
Yes. And it's, by the way, it's very rare that the FBI even announce an investigation like this, let alone this has never happened with
yeah,
a disclosure like this right before an election.
Right, exactly.
Never.
You don't just like announce
yeah.
that you're doing something like this.
Meanwhile,
it
wasn't worth announcing before the race because the investigation won't be complete until after Election Day.
Well, right.
So this the information without any verified facts is much more damaging to the race than completed information.
Right.
And so unsurprisingly, the Clinton campaign has been like, release everything then. Release
right.
as much information
tell
as you can.
Tell
everyone what's in the
email. Of course they don't know.
No. But I mean, this is the sort of unknown is scarier here for everyone involved except for Donald Trump
right.
than anything else.
Right.
So as you know, the meddling part is in part that he sat on this information for a long time
yeah.
and then released it knowing that there would be no facts to give everyone until after a major political event had
right.
taken place.
Yeah.
That so in any case, it's not clear how it's going to affect polling.
No.
20 million people have already voted early. Good
yeah.
work, guys. You guys are really doing it.
I know.
Well, you tried to go vote
oh
with one of our friends today,
yeah,
and there was a huge line.
And granted, there are not many in Los Angeles. There's not many early voting
places. That's something we maybe
places.
Need to talk about in California.
So I absolutely agree. But we went there, and it was a two-hour line. They had somebody, a poll worker, at the end of the line, and they were like, it's taking people 2 hours to get through. So we, of course, left.
Right.
I have voted already.
Right.
I, after my primary debacle, which I won't rehash, but I told that story on the podcast once.
Right.
I almost didn't get to vote in the primary. Signed up for
mail-in ballot,
which I filled out this week, and I sent it in the mail.
That's
so
right.
I'm done. If I wasn't doing this podcast, I feel like this would be the perfect time, especially considering the nature of this election, for me to literally turn my brain off to it.
Yeah, right. You're done.
Because
you did it.
I'm done, and it's fucking annoying. And, like, I don't want to hear about it anymore.
No. Sick of all of it. This is like, been the most draining run-up to an election in history.
It really has.
Although,
yeah.
That's partially why I feel like I have to vote on Election Day, because
yeah.
voting on Election Day keeps me invested until Election Day.
Right, exactly.
Otherwise, it's just really annoying.
I know.
Also, I recall from my days of voting absentee in New York
yeah.
that there was one important presidential race where I cast a ballot in a primary for a candidate who was no longer in the race by the time it came to New York State.
I remember this.
And
Can
so,
we tell everybody who it was, or is it embarrassing?
Yeah, let's do it. I just said that my it's beloved Anthony Weiner. It's not embarrassing
because I would have voted for him too. Absolutely. Had I been voting absentee in New York at the
and
time.
And here's, I mean, I've announced repeatedly on this podcast that I know that Anthony Weiner's a creep and don't care and would still vote for him.
Yeah.
I'm not sorry.
No.
And along those lines, I was trying to cast a ballot for John Edwards.
I was trying to cast a ballot for John Edwards too, but I was voting in California and he'd already dropped out.
Exactly.
At that point. But
yeah. It was a mess. But I did cast a ballot for John Edwards, and unfortunately, he had dropped out of the race by the time New York State came around. And that's why I've decided voting early is a sham. But everyone should do it.
Right. It's a sham, but get out there.
But get out there. Do your part. In any case, 538 had some interesting thoughts about what Clinton can do to kind of squelch the situation and move forward.
Right.
One, some of which he is doing, including demanding as much information from Comey as possible.
Right.
Her and her surrogates have been all over the place being like, then release everything. Release it on Monday. Release, you know, like...
And that's a good idea for a couple reasons, but a bad idea for one. Because, like, A, it makes her look like she has nothing to hide, which throughout this whole email debacle, it has often looked like she has something
to
hide.
She's looked like she's had tons of things.
By her going out and being the champion for information release sort of is a good look for her. But also, if it's the type of thing that could potentially die on its own, which it actually might be, continuing to talk about it and demanding information is maybe also not the best
play. The big reveal moment caused panic among everybody on Earth, and by 2 hours after the reveal, everyone was like,
"Is
this a story?"
It was a big nothing. Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
So I got literally three individual text messages that morning, panicking, and then I also had every single person that I work with come up to me and ask me if I was panicking. And I was like, "I'm feeling pretty good. How are you guys feeling?"
I know. Yeah.
Sounds like you might be panicking.
I know.
The other thing that they said is, you know, the Clinton campaign can try to rile up Democrats to get them really, and you know.
Right.
Annoyed at Comey so that outside forces start to attack Comey.
They've been doing this as well. And she has had obviously some problems, you know, getting people riled up on her behalf in this election. So if she could find a way to do that
it would only help her turnout.
Yeah, exactly. That obviously probably wouldn't help undecided voters much,
but it could
bring people to her side and get some much needed sort of like excitement for her campaign.
I still believe, despite the fact that people on the far left hate her and people in the middle don't trust her and people on the right think she's the devil and people in the middle feel pretty ambivalent about her, that the thing that wins races for Democrats is turnout.
Yes.
The reason I think she's a bad candidate is because she doesn't bring turnout.
Yeah.
And this is a way...
If she can make this
a central issue, then that helps turnout, and turnout helps her. It doesn't matter who the turnout is.
Agreed.
All turnout helps the Democrats. So she can also try to attack the media for how they covered the story, which was atrocious, but that's pretty risky
considering that's
Donald Trump's main talking point.
Exactly, yeah. She could also do the exact opposite of the first strategy, which was demand more information, and she could literally just not say another word about it.
She hasn't done that.
She hasn't done that. I think that this... She might do this, but I think she's going to probably at least wait a couple more days to see what the polling on this is.
Yeah.
Because if people are, A, saying that they don't care, and B, it looks like the story is dying on its own, which it could. I mean, just since we already know.
Well, what more is there to the story?
We're
not going to find anything
more out. We're not going to find anything out. It might just be in her, you know... Her best decision might be to literally just pretend like it never happened.
Exactly.
But the fourth one is my favorite one, obviously, because we love gossip on this podcast.
Gossip. That's why we're doing a podcast about politics.
Right, exactly. Yeah. There are a lot of reporters out there that speculate that Hillary might have one or two more, you know, juicy opposition dumps.
I contend they would
Trump.
Be fools if they did not.
I would contend that too.
They have an opponent with an infinite number of potential dumps.
Right. Yeah.
There's nothing but dirt on this guy.
Yeah, exactly. So there's no proof of this, but you would think that it would be something, it's how you run a campaign, and especially when you're the Clintons.
Yeah,
seems like this would be something that they would definitely have thought of. And
they
especially
play real dirty,
especially,
you guys.
Especially considering all the way that this campaign has sort of like, or campaigns at least have gone for her in the past, that she always... Something shitty always happens.
The very last minute. She has the worst luck of any slightly
so
evil
it's like
person on
you
Earth.
You would want to have something to sort of combat that bad luck.
Exactly.
So we'll see what that is. There are some things that are tricky about that.
Yes.
You have to know when to drop it. It has to be sort of big enough to drop.
It has to be something...
If it's unsubstantiated, then there's blowback to you on it. You'll remember there was a lot of gore blowback when they released that George W. Bush drunk driving thing back in 2000. That sort of hurt Gore almost as much or more than it hurt George W. Bush. So you have to... You have to play the game right when it comes to
and it has to be an interesting story.
Right.
It can't be more of the same news that like if Donald Trump said that he was going to grab women by another body part or something,
he called a different beauty contestant fat or
called someone a slut or something. Like that's not news.
No,
I almost feel like there is no way to get a shocking story out of this guy anymore.
Donald Trump actually did murder someone.
Right.
Like, I mean, what else?
Not even. Right? Like, Donald Trump has secretly been going to school this whole time. It would have to be something so jarring and bizarre.
Right. Or he really is saying bigly.
Right,
that big
exactly.
League.
It would have to be something insane that we could never have predicted.
Yeah.
Because
this is going to be another thing that she'll probably wait on.
Yeah, I would think so.
You would see
you
what
do that
the,
3 days
the polling
before the election
is. Yeah, exactly.
Get that out there the weekend before the election.
Speaking of polling, we've got some. Most of it doesn't necessarily take into account.
Yeah, it's hard to get numbers because, over the weekend for things.
Right,
so
and
usually
this happened
weekend
on
polls
Friday.
Are
but there are, you know, it's tightening a little bit, but that always happens.
And also, if you look at the 538 like graph of how close and far it's been over this time, it works in waves. And we're on a downtick right now.
Right.
And
but still super high in her favor.
Exactly.
I mean, but yes. It,
yeah,
like
what
went,
is it? 70?
Yeah, it something. Went from, I think her chances of winning were like 87 last week to like 78 this week.
Yeah.
And while that is a 10-point decline, which is maybe not great, it's still a
78%.
Right.
She's got more than
three-fourths of it. Exactly. And like the Real Clear Politics average went from 4.6 on Saturday to 4.3 on Sunday. So like big whoop. I mean,
right. Yeah.
So we'll see how
when
some the
numbers
of the early
are starting to harden
polling.
Anyway, because this is around the time that undecided voters start to actually declare a loyalty to a candidate.
And both of them got more support.
Yeah.
Like in the most recent polling, they both went up. And that's because these people were sort of finally starting to break. And they're breaking almost evenly, it seems.
Yeah. Well, that makes sense. If you have two candidates that are equally loathed by everyone on Earth.
Right. You just pick one.
You just pick any of them.
People are flipping coins at home all over the country right now.
Isn't it a crazy world that we live in where you could flip a coin between Hillary Clinton and Donald Trump and not know? Like I sort of, I get it.
Of course. Yeah.
Because
yeah.
on the hatred side, I get it.
Yes.
I don't get it on the proactive side, though. Like, I sort of don't get it, like, well, they'd be equally the same at running the country.
No.
Like, just...
Because they, they definitely
because one of them is, like, a dumb person is the problem.
Right.
It's like, I don't even, like, necessarily think that Hillary Clinton is, like, a leading political genius. Because we've described on this podcast a lot of
the
missteps
the
she's made.
All the ways that she isn't.
She missteps and has sort of foibles that are like her own that
she's
she can't get rid of.
But not the president because she's not a great political genius.
Exactly. But like she's not like an actual idiot person.
No.
And so it's crazy to think that our choice is people being like, well, I don't know. They're both terrible.
Right.
Maybe I'll go with Trump. Like what?
Well, and you and I were talking about this a little bit though because we were sort of like talking about our attempts at trying to understand the Trump movement and at least being sort of like a little bit more mindful of it. Now, obviously, that's not in regards to sort of the extreme racism and xenophobia of the whole movement, because obviously we're not
very
into
against that.
But, you know, I mean, you can sort of see it on a lot of levels. I was referencing this, if you haven't, there's a 60 Minutes special last week that they did in Ohio, which I would highly recommend watching. I'm sure it's online. But it was talking about like, you know, Republican women who have always voted Republican who are voting for Hillary. And it was, you know, but they also talked, you know, they were going through all of these Ohio towns, which are devastated. I mean, they are ghost towns. And they're talking to these people who used to work in these factories that were there, who now cannot provide for their families. They don't have pensions. They don't have, you know, and you can understand.
You can see why they're saying
blow up the
system. You can
understand the draw of a Trump candidacy.
Yeah,
now, I think that they are wrong, and I also would contend that this is why a Bernie Sanders candidacy would have been the right answer in answer to a Trump candidacy. But we're not living in that world. That's a fantasy land, sadly. But, you know, you can start to, I think that when you really like get down to why some of the people are voting for him, while I would wholeheartedly disagree with them, you can get it because these people are struggling and they are trying to put their lives back together.
Yeah. Well, and I think I've been trying to figure out how to have empathy for Trump voters.
Right.
Because I think that it's important that instead of, you know, the behavior that we saw with the Clinton campaign when they won the primary was a turnoff to a lot of Sanders voters.
Sanders, totally.
I don't think we want to go down that road in that
either.
Way nationally, because we are already a mess.
Right.
And I don't think it would be fair of us who are Democrats to turn around and be like, ha, you're idiots, goodbye.
Right. Yeah.
Because people were responding to real concerns in their lives with this Trump thing. Were
yeah.
they responding appropriately?
No.
But I'm trying to figure out sort of like what we can do to dial back the fear a little bit, to address the sort of address the livelihood concerns that have
yeah.
arisen in a lot of communities that are supporting Trump,
yeah.
to address the feelings that they don't have any control over their lives, that,
yeah.
you know, I mean, to sort of address some of the changes that have been negative that they've been experiencing in a way that prevents us from continuing down this path.
Right.
And
we
don't want to do that. I sort of don't trust the Clinton people to not do that, because
yeah.
from what I mean, I've had to start all week I've been complaining to Brent and my mom that I've had to start blocking Clinton supporters on my Facebook page.
Oh my
God. I've been seeing crazy vitriol from Clinton supporters, and I get it. It's frustrating if you have friends on your Facebook page that are supporting Trump and they're up to shenanigans, and you
right.
or you have, you know, you feel like people are, you know, sort of challenging this race unnecessarily
right.
and putting it at risk.
Or I also have very vocal Stein supporters, and I'm afraid that they might get murdered.
Yeah, no, I know. Well, that's the thing. But it's like, whether or not, like, first of all, voting third party is not the same thing as voting for Donald Trump. I would implore you to stop writing rants on Facebook about that.
Right.
It makes you seem like you don't understand the Electoral College, not right. vice versa.
I know.
Second of all,
Or voting,
exactly. I would sort of implore everyone to think about how, in, you know, I understand you can get impassioned during a race or whatever,
yeah.
but we can't sort of like abandon these Trump people after this race is over. And so
right.
I have been trying to think to myself, like, what would fix this for them? Like, what,
right.
what that isn't racism? You know, these are like, because these are people that a lot of, you know, I've been listening to a lot of podcasts that sort of explore the Trump phenomenon. I've been trying to read about it. A lot of it is people who feel like their economic livelihood has somehow been affected by changes in the last few decades.
Right.
They blame free trade for that, and they blame immigrants for that.
Yeah.
Those are the two sources the Republicans have told them to blame.
Well, right.
They don't actually know if that's the cause of
yeah.
these problems,
yeah.
but that's what they've been told is the problem. And just as oftentimes when you're just a random person who's been told that there's a problem, you have, like, you think an authority figure is giving you the right information.
Right.
Like, that's kind of what's happened here.
Yeah.
So these are not people that I think necessarily, like, have to be racist. I think we've created this racism.
I agree.
And
I think
that
some of them were already that way.
There's yes, of course. But I mean, like, this, I don't think that we can sort of like assume that 42% of the country is part of a racist system. Of course. 100% of the country is part of a racist system.
Sure.
That's absolutely true. I don't think that we can afford to think about all of these people as just idiots.
If we could,
they're not
I was going to say, if we could fix,
confused.
If we could fix financially these, or, you know, financially jobs, sort of just how
yeah.
they are feeling about their station in life, they would ditch the anti-immigrant. They
yeah.
would ditch
well,
the
and a lot
racism.
Of this
they
starts
would ditch
local
the, they would,
too. You know, I mean,
totally.
I've been listening to the United. I've been talking to everyone about United States of Anxiety, this WNYC and podcast that's being done in conjunction with The Nation, where they're exploring Trump support on Long Island, and like. One of the things that I think is fascinating about it is that all of this sort of archaic sounding rhetoric that Trump uses that seems to harken back to like this, you know, like urban politics in the
80s
yeah. is really directly relevant to white people living in the suburbs right now and not really to people living in cities. People living in cities don't, these quote unquote inner city problems that he's always referencing that are
yeah.
just like coded racist arguments about
well,
nonsense.
Right. And he doesn't understand those
And
anyway.
He's, you know, he's I mean, talking about drugs and he's talking about gang violence. He's talking about all these things. These are all things that they do have some element of still on Long Island, or not still, that are new elements that they've sort of, you know, like they have a heroin epidemic on Long Island that
sure.
is unlike anything they've ever seen. Almost everyone in Suffolk County seems to know someone who's died in an OD. They do have gang violence problems there. It's partially because they're not providing enough services to a slew of Central
right.
American immigrants that have come into the, you know, to the area recently.
Yeah.
And so there's suddenly this gang violence problem that they've never seen before because they moved to the suburbs
right.
to ostensibly be with only people like them and get rid of these, you know,
yeah.
these problems. And so there is this sort of like bizarre, archaic language that's connecting with them.
Yeah.
And the reason it doesn't connect to urban people is because these are not the same problems we have anymore in the city. I don't know anyone who's addicted to heroin.
Right.
It took me years to find out that there was a heroin epidemic going on.
Right.
It was like, I literally just like met a drug counselor from Vermont and I scoffed and was like, what do you do as a drug counselor in Vermont? And she was like, deal with the heroin epidemic that's ravaging the state. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
So like, these are things that are sort of existing outside of the circle of Clinton voters to some degree. And so because of that, it's like hard to understand that there is a sector of the country, and it's not necessarily that they've fallen on hard times or that they're doing worse than the rest of us or anything like that, but we do sort of have to figure out, like, why their sense of, like, rationality eroded this way.
Yeah.
And I think I contend that a lot of it started with the war on terror.
Yeah.
I think that changed the sort of dynamics of fear in America to a degree that people who felt resolutely safe before 9/11 now feel afraid everywhere. And people who live in cities have always felt afraid everywhere. So this didn't change that much about our feelings about things. If you grew up in New York City, you're like, well, 9/11 was pretty sucky. Yeah. But like, weren't we always being told that there was a gang around every corner and we were going to be shot in the streets and there was going to be drugs on our doorsteps?
Right.
And, you know, we were always being sold these stories anyway.
Yeah. The people in the suburbs weren't.
People in the suburbs and in rural areas were not.
To get away from these things. Those
and so 9/11 came and they were suddenly told, be afraid in your homes.
Right.
Anything could happen anywhere. And your Muslim neighbor is probably responsible.
Yeah.
And they were like, I'm afraid now of all things and I don't know where to direct this fear. I'm going to vote for Donald Trump like an idiot. But in any case, those are my long unsolicited thoughts on that.
Yeah.
As far as state polling goes, we're seeing some polls that Hillary Clinton might be taking the lead in North Carolina.
Yeah, that's a big one.
That's concerning for Trump.
Like, again, we preface this with we don't know how these are shaking out in terms of the FBI business from Friday.
Yeah.
But, I mean, three separate polls all came out today, Sunday, from North Carolina that had her. One of them had her up like 8 or 9. I can't remember. She was up in all of them. And, like, as people have been saying throughout sort of like this process, the people who are doing the math to get to 270, we're not mathematicians, so I can't.
Thank God.
Would never try to tell you. But if she basically eats into any state that Mitt Romney won, then Trump is sort of hosed. If she if he wins all of the states that Romney won and even wins, let's say, Florida.
Right.
If he loses North Carolina, he doesn't have a path if he loses North
Carolina.
Right,
let's also remember that Romney lost.
Winning
every state that Romney won's not
doesn't
enough.
Doesn't do it. No, you have to win.
Extra.
You have to win all of those
right.
and then win something else.
Exactly.
So if you don't win all of those, then it's
bad news.
It's toast. Yeah.
She's back with a comfortable lead in Wisconsin and Colorado. That's good news. Colorado was really scaring everyone for a while there.
And Pennsylvania, she's up. That was one of the like on the must-win list for Trump.
Yeah.
Because he's making a play there. Wisconsin was another one that they thought sort of they might have, you know,
a shot.
An inside track on. Yeah.
Yeah.
And it doesn't seem like either of those things are happening. Okay. So it still seems.
Well, yeah, because
we'll see what the polling looks like early this week, but it's still. You know, this is why she still has a 78% chance of winning on the 538
average.
The thing
that helps her is that Virginia is tied up. So Virginia, that is something. Usually Virginia is one of the big three that we have to look at. We have to look at Pennsylvania, we have to look at Florida, and we look at Virginia.
Yeah.
Virginia's tied up in this race. Virginia's in the bag for Clinton.
Yeah.
And so.
Well, and that's the thing. And like,
he has
Colorado,
a much harder road here.
Well, that's the thing. You know, everybody sort of always focuses on Florida and Ohio, and that's because they have been battleground states and they are big battleground states. But what we should remember is that if Hillary wins the places that Democrats always win, and then she also wins Colorado and Virginia, she has 270.
Exactly.
The Democrats can now are now to the point in a presidential election where they can let the Republicans have Florida and Ohio.
Yeah.
I mean, you don't want to let them.
No,
let them.
Let's not
but
let
I mean,
them.
Like,
but, like, let's.
But, like, that's the world that in which we live in, which is why it's, you know, easier for Democrats to become president.
Right. And then we just can never win the House back. So.
Right. Exactly. That's
the system
toast.
We've worked on. Also, by the way, if you're going to be undecided about. I have a new thing that I'm telling people about the presidential race.
Yeah.
Only, I'm not saying this in battleground states. I think you should vote for someone in a battleground state. You vote third party if you need to. I mean, do what you need to do to be yourself.
Yeah.
But I think you should vote in the presidential race in a battleground state. If you live in a safe state and you just can't bring yourself to wade into this, I understand the compulsion. make sure to vote down ticket.
Yeah.
Just don't vote in it.
Yeah, just don't vote for the president.
And we're not saying, but show up. Vote for everything else. The things that will fix all of these things that Trump supporters are responding to are down ballot candidates.
Totally.
You know, where local races matter. Yeah. They matter to your everyday life a lot more than the presidential race. So for sure. If you can't deal with wading into this and you truly are thinking to yourself, maybe I won't show up.
Don't do that.
Still show up. Yeah. Always show up.
Show up.
You don't, I mean, I would never say don't vote in a race. I vote in races I'm not even informed on sometimes just because I love casting a ballot.
But if you're
in
California, if you want to write in Darth Vader, then you can.
Like, if you need to write in a complete nonsense person just to get through that part of the ballot and vote for Kamala Harris for Senate, you should do that.
Right.
Then if that's what you need to do to show up, do whatever you need to do to show up to the polls. That's all.
Exactly. That's right.
Meanwhile, an important vote of confidence gone from the Trump campaign.
Right. His own.
His own. Donald Trump himself has dramatically cut his own campaign spending. Yeah.
Throughout most of the summer and early part of the fall, he had spent $2 million on his own campaign.
And he's going to really root out corruption, that guy.
In October, he gave it $31,000. It's probably because he's funneling all this money into Trump television.
Some of that was also in complimentary rent at his own property.
Yeah, it wasn't actually
cash.
Yeah, exactly. and he was not the only big dollar donor to his own campaign that stopped donating to it. Because basically all of the RNC's joint fundraising committee that they have with him had taken in $100 million in September, and they only had $61 million in October. And a lot of big donors started giving to outside conservative groups that are focused on down ballot races.
We're seeing
so they basically abandoned
exodus.
Trump, and they're like, let's make sure we win the Senate. Let's make sure we win the House, which is
by
a
the way,
upsetting.
It's upsetting because it's working. We're still seeing concerning Senate trends in the polls, even as Hillary Clinton has a comfortable lead for the presidency. Yeah. We are seeing some concerning things emerge in the Senate.
Yeah.
Vote for Senate.
Vote for
That's
the
why
Senate.
I'm saying if you can't vote for president, at least show up for the Senate.
And especially if it's concerning to me, not just that the Republicans have the Senate because,
gross.
But also, if Hillary Clinton is going to become the president and the Republicans have the House and the Republicans have the Senate, your first instinct would probably be to think, oh, God, we're never going to get anything done. My instinct is to think we're going to get a lot of shit done.
And it's all
and it's
gonna
not
going to
be anything that you like. Because if there's anything that Hillary Clinton would relish, it would be to be the consensus maker with the Republican Congress.
Absolutely.
And to pass a bunch of garbage that you don't fucking want.
Exactly. That's how the Clintons made themselves the Clintons.
Exactly.
That's a famous Clinton maneuver.
And we've got a Republican senators already out there talking about how they're excited to work with her. Jeff Flake has said it. John McCain has said things
they're
of this nature.
They're old friends of hers.
They are all just waiting to have Republican Hillary Clinton be president while they have the Senate.
Exactly.
So no, don't let that happen,
this
America.
Is, like, truly, if you have to vote for the lesser of two evils for Clinton, that's your business. You have to vote to fix. You
Go
have to vote.
If you live in Wisconsin, to vote for Russ Feingold.
If you live in Colorado, vote for Bennett or whatever his name is. Yeah,
vote.
Michael Bennett.
You got to think out there, people.
We have to protect ourselves from the lesser of two evils.
That's right.
You have to vote defensively, even as you vote offensively.
Like, wise words.
Thank you. Like, just don't.
I sort of followed you.
Exactly.
No, <I'm just> kidding.
This is kind of the, I think, maybe big distinguishing talking point that this podcast will have with other podcasts from other insiders who don't view this the same way.
Right.
But they're like truly the Clintons as in their role as consensus makers. We've talked a lot about how they often like to argue from a weak point and argue to a worse point.
Yeah.
This is what they do. Yeah. This is how they negotiate.
She's just
this is what
waiting to go buddy up to Lindsey Graham.
This is what
I mean.
Being
she's having wet dreams about
exactly
that right now.
Being
and
a policy
I,
wonk,
don't let her have it.
Being a policy wonk allows you to be that way because you can see minor victories as real progress, even when you've given away the
while
bigger
you're fucking over
the bigger
America.
Issue. Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. So this is a truly the like the Senate is truly the most important thing
we've
that
been
you can
saying
vote
it
for here.
For months, and it's becoming even more crystalline to me as we get closer.
Meanwhile, one group of people that have also that have not scaled back their donation.
They're giving the same amount of money as they've been giving the entire campaign, his children.
They have not given a dime.
And that is $0.
So all of his most important mouthpieces have given no money to this campaign.
Oh, boy. A couple of them didn't even vote for him.
It could be.
Remember?
Oh, yeah. Well, the New York State has complicated voting laws, and you have to register in time. I like to think that maybe they are better business people than he is.
Well, they might be.
That's, I mean, I wouldn't put money into that.
I was going to say, they saw early that it was a bad investment.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, we heard a very funny story.
Right.
From Paul Manafort, Trump's former campaign manager, who's apparently now just out shit-talking up a storm.
The reason that we don't have vice presidential candidate Chris Christie is because Paul Manafort easily tricked Donald Trump into picking Mike Pence.
Here's what happened. He basically... So, Trump and Pence, in July, had an impromptu dinner.
Yes.
The reason they were able to have the impromptu dinner is because Paul Manafort lied to Trump and said there were mechanical problems on his plane, so he couldn't leave town.
So they had to stay in Indiana.
So they had to stay in Indiana.
Right.
And that's,
not mechanical problems.
There were not mechanical problems. Trump was like, oh, okay, had dinner with Pence, and then was like, never mind. No, because Paul Manafort saw the writing on the wall with Bridgegate.
Right.
And was like, I'm not trying to have Chris Christie be involved in his campaign.
And as big of an idiot as Paul Manafort is, he was not wrong there.
He wasn't wrong there. No, exactly. So apparently, Donald Trump, as easy to fool as a small child.
Greatest negotiator ever to live on Earth, Donald Trump.
Can be easily
Trump.
Tricked by a lie. Oh, by a white lie that changes the course of history.
Oh, what an idiot.
Oh, God.
God. Before we get off of Trump really quickly, can we just have a digression and talk
Obviously.
About the speech that we heard
oh my God.
Bits and pieces of on MSNBC
I'm so
yesterday.
Excited for
we
Trump
TV. We were just driving around in my car the other day and we're listening to MSNBC on satellite
I
radio.
I recommend
and they
spending
were
every Saturday doing that, by the way.
You should, in the same way that you should listen to a Sarah Palin speech,
yes.
even though it will infuriate you, you should be listening to more Donald Trump speeches and not the ones that he's having. You probably heard the one at the RNC.
Right.
We're not talking about that. We're not talking about the times when he's reading off of teleprompters. That's we're not interested in that.
No.
We are talking about the times when he is off the cuff.
Rally Donald Trump.
Rally Donald Trump. He was talking about...
He's an absolute poet.
He's a poet. He was talking about... how it was gonna be better than Brexit. Remember, he was talking about Brexit.
Bigger than Brexit.
Bigger than Brexit.
It's a campaign of love, Brent.
It was such a confusing. I mean, it was truly hard to follow.
In true Sarah Palin fashion.
Yeah.
It was almost spoken in a cadence that was similar to slam poetry. Like, it was confusingly phrased.
There were so many times where I did not know whether to laugh or cry.
So true.
And it was all insane. So. We recommend you. You've probably only got 9 more days to do it because it doesn't look like he's going to be the president.
No, I'm waiting for him to have a show on Trump TV.
Oh,
and I will watch that show. I've said it before, and I'm not afraid. I know Donald Trump is an idiot asshole.
Yeah,
I refuse.
But he's one that was made for television.
I refuse to admit that to acknowledge that he's not a television savant of some sort. Like, he has a gift for something.
Yeah,
it's not what you would normally have a gift for. It's not a money-making gift, per se, but he is a gift of a sort.
Right, exactly.
And that is a sort that I find to be more entertaining than almost anything on Earth.
Yeah. Moving on from presidential politics, do you remember when the Bundy clan took over federal land with firearms?
Invaded a federal building with their guns and then held people hostage? Yeah.
Yeah, they just were acquitted for doing both of those things.
Yes. It's interesting. Their whole action was impeding federal workers with firearms.
Right.
That was what they did.
And that was what they were being tried for.
Right.
And they were found not guilty.
They were found not guilty of just that.
Of doing that.
Somehow, in committing the action of literally impeding federal workers with firearms. And then, commandeering a federal building. With, again, firearms, they somehow were not guilty of that.
I mean, hey, if you can do something like that and get off, I mean...
Open season for white men separatists.
Seriously.
Well, one thing that I've always found interesting about the Bundys is they seem to affix a sort of a value to the American flag that is not what it the American flag to them represents protest against the American government as opposed to that government itself.
Yeah, it's so curious.
Because they're always
planting
the flag. They always have the flag with
them. Right. But it's you are currently you're doing the most anti-American thing that you can be doing right now.
Like, you're literally at war with the American government. So commandeering the flag and calling it your own is not it.
No, that's
you're not being an American when you're at war with the thing that is America.
Yeah. Yeah.
Doesn't make any sense. In any case.
Hilariously, though, there was some courtroom drama.
Oh, my God.
Because their attorney, whose name is Marcus Mumford, he was taken down by U.S. Marshals who reportedly used a stun gun on him, you guys, because
he was arguing, apparently, very vehemently that his client should be set free.
Right, because they're currently still in custody because because of the Bundy Ranch thing, they have not been tried for yet.
Right.
So they're awaiting, like, those federal charges.
But as far
charges
as we
to
can
be
tell... Being at war with federal marshals is probably not enough to get these guys convicted of anything.
I would think that they would get off on this charge because apparently you can just do whatever you
want. Because it's opposite day in the fucking court system for them.
Yeah.
So there was a stun gun incident. The only person to be injured in the court that day.
Yes.
No one was morally or otherwise injured.
Oh, boy.
Meanwhile, some terrible news for anyone who thinks that letting private businesses be involved in health insurance is a good idea.
Right.
It's not. That's the news.
We're looking at you, Hillary Clinton.
Exactly. On Monday, federal officials announced that monthly premiums in the federal Obamacare exchange are going to rise at like
25%.
And that's quite a bit.
That's quite a bit.
There are 38 states that use that marketplace, so that's most of the country.
And a lot of the state, it's going up more than that.
Yes.
In a lot
in
of
some
places.
States.
Yeah.
I heard in California we're okay.
I don't know.
I wonder if we're already being charged too much money.
Maybe we are because our friend Lauren, hers is going up almost $100 a month. And my parents just switched because theirs was going almost $100 a month.
Too.
They had to switch to an HMO because their
PPO
was
became too expensive.
Way too expensive.
Yeah, oh, so maybe I've read an article that was probably propaganda then.
I don't know. It probably was. Anyway.
Because last year we had an increase, but it was only 7.5%, which is too much. But this is a lot
way too much.
More than that.
But...
insurers have dropped out of the program.
Yeah, exactly. There are some states who only have one to pick from now.
Yeah. Well, this is the statistic that I think is the most disturbing of all of this is that this whole system was designed to create competition within the insurance companies.
Yes.
And in 2016, 2% of customers had only one company that they could shop with.
Yeah.
That, you know, that came up that with the exchange was willing to cover
them.
This year, there are going to be 21% of the exchange customers are going to find only one insurance company offered. That's nuts.
That's crazy.
A fifth of the people participating in the federal exchange are going to be given only one option for insurance in this entire fucking nation.
Yeah. Whew,
like,
buddy,
that's not
good.
Well, and that's the antithesis of what this was designed to do.
Right. Well, and... One thing that I have a bone to pick with some people right now.
Yes.
I'm not going to name names, but
we're naming you in our thoughts.
Right, exactly. We knew that this was going to happen months ago. We told you about it. People are treating this as like an October surprise, but really it was like a June surprise because
We maintain that having a mandate is the most important piece of the Obamacare legislation and an important precedent.
You have to have that to be able to... For it to function.
Well, also, you have to have that this is the most important piece of the puzzle that we were missing before, where not having a mandate meant that we didn't have an incentive to find the cheapest way to get everyone covered, because we didn't think people deserved coverage. Now, it is our incentive to find the cheapest way to do this, because everyone is now entitled to coverage.
Yeah.
And that is, I think, a good start.
Yeah.
That said, plan was thought up by the Heritage Foundation for a reason.
That's what's driving up the cost, too. And
fucking private insurance companies, who, first of all, insurance companies are always claiming that they can't afford to do anything because they, you know, because of fake unsubstantiated claims that they can never verify. This happened before Obamacare came into effect in California.
Yeah.
It's been happening after. This is, though, part of the issue has been that healthy people have not been signing up because insurance is still so expensive through the exchanges that it is, if you are truly living paycheck to paycheck, it's worth it to pay the penalty because the penalty is significantly cheaper than having to cover yourself.
Yeah.
What you need is a system where everyone can afford to cover themselves, and this system keeps getting farther and farther away from that.
Exactly. And I had multiple people on Facebook, who are ardent Hillary Clinton supporters, who I know for certain posted articles about the whole thing during the primary season where she was talking about how Bernie Sanders was wanting to throw out Obamacare because he just wanted to have single payer and like single payer. We can't do single payer because, you know, it's not, we just can't do that because we have to make incremental changes because I'm a Hillary Clinton supporter. Those people were all panicked beyond all recognition about these insurance rates and were declaring their immediate love for having a single payer system. Yep. And it was all I could do to, I mean, I was really having a moment with some of these people. And I just had to step away because I was like, it's not worth dealing with them right now. But like, it was really upsetting to me.
Yeah.
So I had to get that off my chest. If you were a Hillary Clinton supporter and you were peddling the story that we can't have single payer and Bernie Sanders was just going to throw the baby out with the bathwater, and now you want single payer because
go
the Obamacare
die in a well.
That's what you should do.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I mean, just immediately.
I never want to hear from you in this lifetime.
Never.
Or the next again.
I unfollowed more Clinton people so far than Trump people in this race as a whole.
I'm not surprised.
That's a real life thing that's happened to me.
I'm not surprised. Yeah.
Like, it's nuts.
Ugh.
But yeah, this is, I think, such infuriating news to get on the heels of a campaign that was fought against the very idea that we could fix this.
Exactly. And she is claiming that she's going to fix it, but I don't really know that we necessarily know how that's going to happen. Yeah,
how
exactly.
Can she,
that's
I mean,
the thing. Yeah.
What's the way to fix this that isn't single payer, that ensures that Americans are able to both afford their insurance and it's worth it for healthy people to get the insurance in order to keep the costs down?
Yep.
That insurance is only single payer. So if we can't have that, then what is the incremental change that fixes this? Nothing.
Nothing.
Insurance companies make tons of money. They still devote tons of overhead to denying claims, essentially. Because part of what makes private insurance so expensive is there's this bureaucratic layer to it that you don't have to have in non-for-profit insurance companies.
Yep.
So a company has to have lawyers. They have to have people that look at your claims and then deny them. They have to have people you can call to complain when your claim gets denied. They have to have all these
things. To spend millions of dollars on advertising these things to
exactly.
you.
Exactly. Yeah. I mean, have you heard, the number of Kaiser Permanente fucking commercials on the radios in California right now?
Yeah.
And all times?
Yeah.
It's like a nonstop, just like, getting berated by fucking what's-her-face's, Allison Janney's voice telling you how comfortable, how wonderful your life could be with Kaiser Permanente.
Yeah.
It's like, go die in a well. In any case, that's a bone to pick.
Yeah.
Another bone to pick that we have this week, we're at the complaining part of the podcast, is that we shouldn't be fucking attacking Standing Rock protesters with any bullets of any material.
Or loud noises.
Loud
or
noises
armored
of any
vehicles,
kind. Armored vehicles of any kind.
Anything.
Also, why is it that the only coverage this ever gets is when white women get arrested at this protest?
We've had Jill Stein get arrested.
Yeah, with Amy Goodman, Shailene Woodley.
Yeah.
And listen,
also, quick time out. Shailene Woodley. Keep doing the people's work.
You're
by
doing
the way.
It.
Who knew?
Who knew?
Right?
Well, she's a kind of crazy hippie.
She is. And
so
she was big
right
on the Bernie train.
Yeah.
And she even went with the Bernie or Busters to the DNC. So, I mean, it's not surprising that she was there and she got arrested.
Good on her.
God bless her.
Yeah, she's really doing it. And, good work bringing attention to this issue because Shailene Woodley's arrest was what got the larger attention.
Yeah.
Amy Goodman was how liberals found out this was happening.
Right.
They were going to try to put her in jail for a million years.
Yeah.
And everyone was like,
hang on.
You can't fucking do that just because she was reporting on a story as a reporter from a protest. Like, go die.
Yeah.
In any case, arresting white women is a rookie PR move. That's protest 101.
Yeah.
That shit makes the press. People are willing to pay white women less. They're willing to treat us like their property. They are not willing to allow us to be hurt, though. That's the one power white women have. So, obviously we should work to fix that so that all women get treated like they shouldn't be arrested, or so that no one is more important than anyone in the arrest train. But also, if you are currently in today's America trying to break up a protest and are trying to figure out the best way to do that without outrage arising from every sector of the earth, don't arrest famous white women.
Nope.
That's not it.
Nope.
In any case, the police went nuts this week, basically,
at the
Standing Rock protest. Yeah. They've arrested about 150 protesters just on Thursday and Friday.
Yeah.
They came in riot gear. They fired pepper spray. They fired beanbags, rubber bullets. They deployed those ridiculous sirens as they barged in on everyone. They were riding around in armored vehicles. They kicked a bunch of, about 250 activists, activists, out of a campsite where they'd been organizing this whole thing. That included this is a largely Native American protest, but that was also included the environmentalists that they had been working with on this and some other liberal activists who were just around hanging out. They claimed it was private property owned by the pipeline company, which
is,
do you think the pipeline company went and bought that property so that they could keep them out? I mean, it seems because
that is also sort of the point.
That's so crazy about this is that the pipeline construction is going forward as this all happens. That's why this never goes away. I think the Justice Department and maybe a bunch of other government agencies asked them to voluntarily halt construction, but they have not done it.
No.
So as this all happens, this construction is continuing. No one is really doing anything about it. Sanders and Warren have spoken out about it.
Thank
Sanders
God
this week.
We heard from Hillary Clinton, though, because she's,
she really had the answers
got
here.
She's got the solutions.
Yeah.
She doesn't, by the way.
No, her statement was basically like, well, everyone has a point, so we should just work it out.
Right. It was
Hillary.
The most and this from a person who I realize ultimately came out against the Keystone Pipeline. But she, I think, in her heart of hearts, is a woman who is pro-pipeline.
She's a pro-pipeline lover. Yeah, so the best that she could do to sound like she wasn't, to not fully alienate the bulk of her own party. To come out and be like, everyone has a point.
Yeah.
Thanks, Hillary. That was helpful.
Yeah.
Activists not backing down. I don't know. Like, breaking up this protest seems crazy because these people are not fucking going away.
No.
They have, like, mobilized tribes from all over the country.
Oh, yeah.
They have professional activists who've been living there for months.
The interstate
they
the other
blocked
day.
Off
I mean,
the interstate.
They're
not fucking around at all.
Yeah.
And
they're not just going to decide that it's okay at a certain point.
Right.
Like, that's not their plan.
They've been throwing Molotov cocktails at officers, according to the police. I mean, officially, it's a peaceful protest. That's what the leaders of the protest have been saying. But I don't know if, you know, this is from the police, so nobody knows how frequently they're getting thrown Molotov cocktails at them. But there was also this weird incident this week where this armed man like came into the campsite and somebody got shot in the hand or something. But apparently they didn't know who it was. He came in, there was a kerfuffle and then he got chased away by a bunch of activists, and it turned out he was a security agent with Dakota Access LLC, which is who's building the pipeline. And they have also used dogs to attack the protesters in by the way.
Come on.
So, like, they're making all the PR mistakes that you could, and yet still being allowed to go unfettered to build this pipeline on Sioux land that is going to poison their water.
Yeah.
They've also, the North Dakota governor has tried to mobilize the National Guard.
Yeah. You know who else is pissed about it? Oh, I just knocked
Brent,
the microphone.
Apparently.
Sorry, me, apparently. The buffalo.
Yes, buffalo were not fucking around. There was like a herd of like 1,000 buffalo
that appeared
at the
protest. No, they just
like
showed up at the protest, which was genius.
And just stared at everyone, as
so
buffalo
good.
Do.
Yeah.
Well, it just goes to show you that nature is terrifying in every respect. But
seriously.
Also, don't fuck with Native Americans.
No.
They'll call the buffalo
they will call
on
their
you.
Buffalo.
Exactly.
Yeah.
This is so. In any case, the Department of Justice, Interior, and the Army have asked the company to voluntarily halt work. That's all of who's asked them. And that was in September.
Right.
But a federal judge rejected the Standing Rock Sioux's attempt to get an injunction on the construction.
Right.
And the company is
so
just,
nobody is forcing them to stop work.
And they're
so
not forcing themselves either.
They certainly aren't. No.
In other terrible news, well, no, this is great news.
This is good news.
We have voter fraud, you guys.
Iowa. By the way.
Leading the nation in voter fraud.
Yes.
We finally have an example of the voter fraud that Donald Trump is constantly referring to when he talks about how the election is rigged.
Yeah.
The voter fraud is being committed by one Trump-supporting 55-year-old woman from Des Moines who voted a second time because she was concerned that her first vote for Trump would be counted for Clinton.
Right.
According to something she said on Iowa Public Radio, I wasn't planning on doing it twice. It was a spur of the moment.
Sure.
And then she repeated that the polls are rigged, the Trump claim.
Yes. Uh-huh.
So she had to vote twice because the polls are rigged. You get it.
You know what? If the polls are rigged, it doesn't matter as long as the actual voting isn't rigged.
Right, exactly.
Like,
the polls don't
can be rigged until the end of time.
Exactly.
And I would also remind Republicans that the reason that they were so crushed that Mitt Romney lost is because they were convinced that the polls were rigged.
Exactly.
So
it turned
out you might also be crushed.
When you discover,
when you find out that the polls, in fact, yet again, were not rigged.
This woman might end up in jail, though. She was released on a $5,000 bond, but she's going to have to go back to court.
Yeah.
The Polk County auditor said that it was the first time in 12 years he could remember having an incident of voter fraud.
Yeah, because
that's how infrequently this happens. But when it does happen, it's always a fucking Republican. You rarely hear about Democrats committing voter fraud.
No.
I mean, Republicans would like to believe that allowing, like, black people to vote is a form
is
of
voter
fraud.
Right.
But that's not what the Constitution would like you to believe.
Correct.
Or what anyone who actually like holds American ideals would like you to believe.
Yeah.
But this is actually, voting twice is actually voter fraud. That's what it is.
It's the definition.
That's the definition of voter fraud.
Yes.
So, and especially if you do it knowingly.
Well, right.
Like, she went to two different polling places and cast ballots at both just in case.
And she's covering her bases.
Yeah, she was covering her bases.
She's voting early and often. That's what you're supposed to do.
That's right. She's heard the saying.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was a Chicago thing. Yeah, she's pretty near to Chicago, as people
close
go.
Enough. Yeah, driving distance.
The Polk County attorney also said on Iowa Public Radio that it was maybe the third voting irregularity he's seen in a criminal charge in more than 25 years.
Yeah.
So, because she could face up to 5 years in prison.
5 years.
She fucking deserves it.
Right?
What an idiot.
What an idiot.
And don't, like, I mean, the thing is that saying that the election is rigged is a great way to make it rigged.
Yeah.
Because it's a great way for your own supporters to start acting in panicky ways that are illegal to try to make sure their vote is counted, like voting more than once.
Yeah, I wonder if he has spoken out against this. He hasn't.
Doubt it. Yeah. In Supreme Court news, we haven't had much of that recently. SCOTUS is going to review the Obama directive that public schools have to let transgender students use the bathroom that corresponds with their gender identity.
Right.
So that should be an interesting case.
They had issued a stay in this.
Yes.
Right, I think.
Well, but the stay that they issued was not the stay that you want issued.
No, it wasn't.
It was the wrong stay.
Yes.
Because a court ruled that the school board that was allowing a transgender student in, I think it was, where was it? Virginia? Yeah.
I'm not sure.
There was a transgender, the case involves a 17-year-old who's transgender in Virginia. The principal had allowed, it's a transgender boy. Mm-hmm. They had allowed him to use the men's room, but then the school board reversed that decision and said that he could use single stall private bathrooms, but that people had to use the restroom that corresponded to their quote, biological gender. So they sued. The court ruled in his favor, saying that Title IX, which bars discrimination based on gender and sex in federal institutions or institutions that receive federal money, that it violated part of Title IX. And so that the Obama administration issued a directive that schools should allow people to use whatever bathroom they want to use. And the Supreme Court granted a stay in the case. But that meant that the school board didn't
Could
have to
go,
comply
right, exactly.
with the ruling that said that they had to allow this boy to use the boy's bathroom.
Yeah.
So
they're going to hear that now.
They're going to hear it now, though. I'm so curious what this court of elderly people thinks about
this. I know.
Because this is a really, this is like a sort of fascinating concept. Because it challenges a lot of, ideas about sort of how we can, of why we even have gendered bathrooms, why genders are separate. The reason that you can always get conservative knee-jerk reactions on this is because women are very much socialized to feel that they're in danger all the time. And this challenges the notion that they sort of have spaces that are just biological women.
Yeah.
And so I think for a court filled with elderly people that are kind of not necessarily caught up on the discussion on this, because I think even younger people are kind of still figuring it out.
So many of what we sort of now have as gender stereotypes that we're sort of trying to get past sort of came into, how they are now at the, at the height of some of these people's, upbringings.
Exactly. So this is an issue that I feel like is still evolving even for people our age. I'm so curious to see what happens when the court hears it. Because is not as cut and dry, I don't think, as marry whoever you want.
Right.
I don't fucking care.
It should be, but I think for them it's not going to be.
Yeah, it's not because it has more to do with self-expression than it does with a civic institution. So, this is not just sort of marry whoever, and it doesn't ultimately change the institution of marriage if people marry, people of the same gender. This kind of changes the notion of gender that we sort of as a government acknowledge.
Yeah.
That is sort of a big change. So I'm sort of interested to see what happens.
Yeah.
I think it'll be interesting. And in final news.
We talked very briefly about this, I think, because I have been to Iceland recently and had heard about this
fascinating thing
that was going on there. But it happened this week because they had their elections this week in Iceland. And the Pirate Party is a real thing.
Yes.
And B, did pretty well.
Yeah. So basically, you might remember that Iceland had a big controversy when their prime minister was named in the Panama Papers and resigned immediately, because that's what happens in Iceland.
Yes.
And then, so they've had this sort of what is essentially an interim prime minister, although I don't think that he necessarily knew that was going to be the case.
Right.
So he's going to resign because the Progressive Party that he belongs to lost more than half of its seats in their parliament. I love, by the way, that all the news articles referred to it as their ancient parliament.
It's the world's oldest parliament.
I know. It's just like funny as
weird, right?
I mean, it is the world's oldest parliament.
I know.
It's funny that everyone
that everybody has
is calling
it
the ancient parliament of Iceland. That makes it sound like we're talking about a historical Iceland government.
Again, by the way, where they first met.
Where they first met. Mm-hmm. Where was it?
It was.
I imagine it being a dirt patch somewhere between two glaciers. Is that wrong?
No, because that is what Iceland is.
Perfect. in any case, the center-right party, which is the Independence Party, is likely to get the new prime minister slot
because they came out with the largest percentage,
29% of the vote. It'll have to be a unity government of some sort because no one got a full, a decisive majority. But the Pirate Party tripled its parliamentary presence from 3 seats to 10.
Yeah.
Expectations were higher than that in the polling. They were showing that they were polling as high as 30%.
25, 30%.
When they were asked about this, they were like, our internal polling never showed anything like that. We knew that we thought we were going to get 10 to 15%.
The computer nerd, so they would have known. If anybody was going to know.
They were founded by internet activists. Yeah. That's what the deal with the Pirate Party is. So they said that they had expected to get between 10 and 15%, and they got 15, so that's pretty decent.
Yeah.
But this was literally a campaign for a tiny nation that got a lot of international attention.
Yeah.
I think there were internet activists from like 15 countries that came to work on this campaign and some Sanders staffers.
Perfect.
We're just out there, you guys.
Yeah.
We're just always out there.
Oh, anyway,
that was the news this week.
That was it. Next week, final podcast before the election.
It is going to be an exciting one. Or not. Nobody knows. It might be a very discouraging one.
It could be. It could be a panicked one.
What we will know for sure is that I will be getting to vote in 2 days, and that's my favorite thing to do in the
world.
So, I mean, I'll be excited regardless.
But vote.
Vote.
If you can vote early,
If you can vote early, do it. If you truly think you're going to stay home for this election, don't.
Don't.
If you truly hate both presidential candidates that much, don't let angry Hillary supporters on the internet tell you not to vote. They can be angry that you're not voting for their candidate. That's how elections are. You don't have to feel like the only value you have as a voter is to vote for the president. That's absolutely not true. The most value that you have as a voter has to do with every other person thing on the ballot besides the president.
Yep.
The presidential race is the least relevant of all of the races that you will get to vote on this year.
To you.
To you personally. Yeah. Not to the nation's fate as a whole, but to you personally.
Right.
So don't be an idiot. Show up at the polls.
Get out there.
By the way, you get a sticker. If you're not going to vote, you're not going to get the sticker. So, I don't know why you would even bother not showing up.
I had some initial concerns about whether I was going to get a sticker by doing the mail-in ballot.
They mail you the damn
sticker.
Because they get it.
So, however you want to play this, guys.
Yeah. You're going to look like a fool if you don't have the sticker.
Yeah. Not posting an I voted sticker on election day is...
It's going to be embarrassing for you.
Social media suicide.
Exactly. So, don't even consider the thought that you could just not show up.
Yeah.
But... We'll
talk to you next week.
All the updates from this next roller coaster.
Yep.
Talk to you later. Bye.